You are listening to Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast.
Swung and lined to deep left field. It is gone!
This is Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast, episode 130. I'm your host, Matt Lyons, and on this week's episode, we'll get some meatballs for you, talk about some interesting things that happened to the Indians this week. Jose Ramirez is on the 10-day injured list with a broken hamate bone. We'll talk about that and what's next for the Indians. Trevor Bauer had some comments on Cleveland, or more specifically, managers and coaches in Cleveland and the information he received from them. We'll talk about that. And we'll review Fan Pulse, the poll that SB Nation sent out last week, and look ahead to maybe what will be coming for that later on about confidence in Indians from the Indians fans and approval of Terry Francona and all that stuff. Before getting all that, I want to thank everybody listening, wherever you're from, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you are, wherever you listen, give us a review, leave a comment. Just let us know you're listening and helps people find us. So joining me for all that and more is none other than Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
I'm pretty good.
God damn it, Merritt, we talked about this. got it.
Okay.
Doing good. You're wide awake. I know you got.
I know. I'm feeling perky.
We're both doing great.
That's the word. You know, we're feeling chipper and good. And
neither of us are starting to be sick or tired, or we're just good all day.
From a day of toil. No, none of this happened.
You just conveniently were able to miss the worst game of the year, one of the worst games of the year, to help your brother move. Whatever.
Or it's almost fine. One of the best ones when you think about it.
It was really close to going either way, quite frankly.
I mean, a real winner of a game, theoretically.
Is it
but
worse?
In fact, it was a toilet game, but yeah.
The worst one, obviously, was the Mets one, right? Like, I say the Mets one, there's like two of them where it could
be. The Mets series was probably the worst series of the season, and I include that even with the whatever the hell happened up in Baltimore, just because they got outplayed in every step of the way. I mean, the Baltimore thing was confusing.
It just felt like flukes, but this they felt like.
You're like, what the hell is going on here? Like, they're just losing 19 to nothing. This team is... it was baffling, whereas the Mets thing, they just got their butts whooped. They came in and just were just smushed to death the entire series. It was gut-wrenching, I suppose.
And I didn't include it in the rundown, because I forgot all about it until you mentioned the Mets. But the Indians on Twitter, they were trying to be... I don't think they meant an insult by calling the Mets a fringe playoff team,
because
quite frankly,
that's
what they are. But when you're all hopped up on victory and gas station pills and... everything's going to look defensive and you're going to go after everything. So Mets fans like jumped on that. Noah Syndergaard jumped on that. And I thought that was hilarious. So,
well, I mean, yeah, exactly. They're a playoff caliber team, I think would have been the smarter way to phrase that.
You can even just say great team. You're lying, but you're over complimenting lying is the direction you got to go if you're going to say anything.
I mean, there's several players that are on the Mets that I'd prefer the Indians have over current Indians players. So I don't know. I mean, I think the Mets are somewhere short of great, but they're a very good team. They're a very good team, I guess.
Yeah, that's all you're going to say.
Yeah.
It was a weird tweet anyway. Their whole like, that's something you think a manager would say, not the social media account. And then, I don't know, they must be having a rough time. I can't imagine all the crap they've seen over like the past 48 hours with that series. So it happens. You know what else happens, Merritt?
Meatballs
happen. That's what happens. So first up, mine is I like this one. Franmil Reyes is a god now. He started slow with the Indians. He didn't look comfortable. He was swinging at absolutely everything. Didn't hit a home run for quite a while, I don't think. But now he's 5-for-19 since Saturday, and he's 8-for-15 since his Indians debut. Or wait, so he's 5-for-19 since last Sunday. In that time, he has one single. All the rest were extra base hits. That's three home runs, including two on Sunday. And then since he debuted with the Indians on August 1st, 15 of his hits, he has 15 hits. Eight of them have been extra base hits, which is kind of incredible that over half of his hits are extra base. I figure that's what we're going to get from him. He's going to strike out a lot. He's going to have a lot of home runs. He's going to have a lot of doubles. And he absolutely crushes the ball. The two on Sunday were 109 mile per hour and 104.
So accidental. It's amazing.
And it was nice just to see him. He's always looked so, like I said, he looked uncomfortable all this time. And when he hit that, what could have been a goddamn game-winning home run, it was a game-tying home run in the bottom of the ninth, two outs, two strikes. He just looks so happy coming around, and he's so big. He's just a fun guy. I mean, there's all this stuff when he was with the Padres about why they loved him so much, gets such a personality. So I hope this leads to him being able to use that more and not just pushing all the time, pressing all the time. So maybe it's a good start.
So on Sunday, final score was what, 9-8?
Yes, it was pretty. Yes, that was the one.
And you might be unsurprised to know that there were a lot of balls hit very hard that day, on Sunday. The hardest struck ball was a 112.6 mile an hour ball. A ground out by Hunter Dozier in the eighth inning, out of the hand of Nick Wickren. That was a launch angle of negative 4 degrees. The second hardest hit ball was 111.4 at 32 degrees by Jorge Soler. Also off Nick Wickren. That was a home run by Jorge Soler, as I said. All told, there were, 17 different balls hit over 100 miles an hour. And if you wanted to round, you could go with 19. Because Oscar Mercado and Humberto Arteaga both struck a ball 99.6 miles per hour. Now, out of context, 19 balls hit that hard. It sounds like a lot, but is it a lot? I just pulled a random sample of other games from Sunday. In the Tigers-Twins game, Twins hit the ball very hard quite a bit. You had 11 balls hit over 100 miles an hour. And the Angels versus Astros, again, Astros. They love to hit the ball very hard, and the final score of that game was 11-2. You think the ball got hit very hard that game? Six times the ball left the bat at over 100 miles an hour. Rockies versus Cardinals, you clock in at 8 times. Reds versus Pirates, again, a final score of 9-8. You'd figure the ball got hit hard a lot. You're at 13 times, 14 if you went around. So I don't know offhand what the record is for most balls hit over 100 miles an hour. Obviously, 100 miles an hour is a arbitrary number. I think the average for a home run is, 104 at like 32 degrees of launch angle or something like that. You see him as low as 98, 99. You see him as high as, 118.4 or something like that is now the record by any one of Aaron Judge or Pete Alonso or Giancarlo Stanton, whoever. But anyway, ball was clobbered Sunday. One half of the pitching staff had good pitchers. The other half did not. But everyone was just kind of being equal opportunity and giving up incredibly hard hit balls. Very interesting stuff, I thought.
All right, so my last one is it goes along with that theme, sort of. It's a sad one for the Indians. It's Nick Goody. He went this whole season. Chris Davies had written about that nobody barreled up Nick Goody. He was one of only two pitchers. Leave that little nugget in there, and we'll get back to the answer later, who the other one is. One of only two pitchers who nobody's hit a barrel off him this season, which is, there's a very precise, I forgot what it was, I had it, but there's a range of launch angle and exit velocity you have to hit to consider barreled, which means
it's over 95 and between 24 and like 34 degrees or something like that, somewhere around there.
There you go. It's like, yeah, like the optimal way to hit a ball. And then nobody's done it off Nick Goody. Other of players with at least 50 batted ball events, which just means 50 times where the ball was put in play and hit off a bat. So it's really impressive. He went this long without it. He's been here the whole season pretty much. And then Ryan O'Hearn, his first batter he faced when he came in today, 106 miles per hour, 22 degree launch angle, 365 feet. It was barreled. It was hit pretty hard. Whit Merrifield came close on Saturday with 96 mile per hour. So maybe we should have saw it was coming that Nick Goody's starting to get hit a little bit higher. But even without that, Nick Goody's been super good this season. His velocity's been up. He's been way better than I think anybody anticipated. I don't know if it's going to last. I don't know if this is the start of the end for Nick Goody and a couple other maybe lucky relievers. But to this point, he's been pretty good. And the weird thing about him, I was looking, he had a 28.6% ground ball rate this year. In the last 3 years, it's been some variation of 28. It's like 28.2, 28 point something else. And then, so he is a scarily consistent fly ball pitcher. Oh. Yeah, he's consistent. That's one way to put it. and then, because that was his problem in New York, because he had a 22% ground ball rate. And his issue was always giving up home runs there because he didn't have, I think it was then his problem was he didn't have, the fastball wasn't quite as good. And then now it's way better than it was before. And it's worked for him. So it's fun to see. So who do you think that other pitcher is, Merritt? Do you have any
guesses? Barreled up at all?
With at least 50 batted ball events this season.
I think that pitcher is somebody whose name is...
I can hear you clicking, Merritt.
I'm actually looking at something else entirely. I don't even know who that could be. Not Taylor Scott. I don't know. Liam Hendricks?
It's Aaron Civale. So the Indians still have the other player without a barreled ball. Yeah. He's still something. He's not a velocity guy, but he's making it work. Really exciting.
He gets the ball literally off the barrel. I mean, I've written about it. We've talked about it before. It's literally his pitching style. He moves the ball this way and that way, just barely. You know, the tight movement with his cutter and his two seamer. So on Sunday, the Indians' starting pitcher was Shane Bieber. He threw 22 curveballs, 22 sliders. This is remarkable to me only in a small way. I read an article about this recently, about just the Indian slider use in general and stuff, and curveball use in particular, kind of hitting an inflection point the last couple of years, in part, you know, because of changes to the staff, this, that, and the other thing. But, you know, whatever the cause, they're throwing way more sliders now and way less curveballs than they were in the past couple of years. The reason I bring this up about Bieber is, for the first time this year, in August, he's throwing more curveballs than he's throwing sliders. He's throwing 26.17% curveballs in August and 25.93 sliders. Now, it's not a huge difference, but this has been a consistent thing for him throughout the year, where we've been watching his curveball usage grow as his slider usage has gone down a little bit. If you remember back to last year, he was heavy on the slider-fastball combo. He's backed off on the fastball considerably. I think last year he, on the season, 57% fastballs and 22% sliders, 16% curves. This year, he's down to 44% fastballs to 28% sliders, rounding. And curveballs up, curveball usage and change usage is up as well. But this is encouraging, I think, because he's continuing to evolve. We watch the guy. He's polished. He seems like a like everything a pitcher should be. And you forget that he's literally thrown, what, 350 innings, maybe, is my rough, without having the numbers right in front of me.
So there's something I didn't have. Again, I'm failing at getting notes, but we don't really need notes for this. There was Players Weekend this weekend, was the Indians and Royals series. And good Lord, this was an absolute disaster.
So you know that song, Ladies Night? You know, no. It's Ladies Night and the feelings. Right. Anyway, they need a song like that.
I'm going to need some more, man. I almost had the recollection. Could you sing a little more? I almost had.
Sure. It's Ladies Night and the feelings right. Ladies Night, ooh, what a night. Now I'm mixing two different songs. Ooh, what a night. That's a different song.
No, I got
song.
Nothing. But anyway, yeah, I don't know what that song is.
Anyway, they need to either take that song or that one R. Kelly song featuring the game called Players Only. And that would, they should play that song at all the time in the stadium or whatever. I don't know. Just idle thoughts while you watch guys play baseball.
Yeah, but what they actually did was a shit show, basically. Yeah,
it was like crap.
It was white and black teams, and then
terrible.
Nobody thought ahead that maybe you can't see a white ball behind a white hat and catch it when it comes out, so they made the pitchers wear black hats. There was Kyle Zimmer in the first game who wore white sleeves, and Angel Hernandez didn't seem to realize it was a problem, so the Indians actually had to call the Major League office to complain about it, and then they made him take the sleeves off. The Dodgers and Yankees played this weekend. And they wanted to wear their, I mean, it's the Dodgers and Yankees. That's a pretty historic matchup. They wanted to wear their classic uniform at least once, and they said no. So, and there was some, Clayton Kershaw wanted to at least wear his own hat instead of wearing the stupid black hat. They said no to that. It's just, what were they? No, it's awful.
It sounds, you know, unmitigated success. You're right. That really does sound perfect.
I just hate watching it. Like, I don't even like looking at the highlight. It made me realize, like, how much of my emotional connection to watching major league games is tied to like the uniform, and it's weird. I don't know, like watching, who was playing, the Marlins and Braves or whatever, like I got nothing watching that. Like just, yeah, skimming, dude, through channels, like you don't get any immediate connection to the game like you normally do.
Like you're looking at you know, you scroll through Twitter or whatever, you know, I have all those Pitching Ninja
tweets, yeah, it's just nobody versus nobody.
I'm like, who are these people? Like man versus man, sick pitch, great, I don't know, whatever, you know. You are right. It really, for a thing rather that's really supposed to highlight the individuality of the players, it really wiped them clear, because not only was it white on white, like white versus black, it was white on white versus black on black, wasn't it? Or black, or either way, it I don't know, it didn't look very good at all.
No, they said the point was to have the players, like their cleats and stuff, stick out, but you couldn't see it. Like there wasn't, you could sort of see like Lindor had this bright red belt, and then he had cool shoes, but there wasn't, it's not worth it. You can't.
No, without a
doubt. You couldn't see his personality through his goddamn shoes.
I like the thought, you know, the thought that counts, I guess.
Yeah.
But it just made everything look impersonal and plain, you know, like there's no vibe. There's no, and like you said, with the whole Yankees Dodgers thing, say what you will about either of those teams, we all have decidedly, you know, grumpy opinions about them. We don't like the teams because they have all the money and they do all the winning. Those are great jerseys. Like the Yankees, yeah, have a great jersey. I can't fault them for, you know, timeless design and whatnot. Same thing with the Dodgers. Like I owned for a while, I owned a blue Dodgers hat because it's a cool hat.
Yeah.
And instead it's this, you know, it's, I don't know, just a crappy nothing hat with. And like you said, watching a Braves Marlins game or even highlights, like the Marlins. Oh,
watching highlights is miserable. Like watching, I usually watch quick pitch in the morning while I'm doing other stuff, and it was just like, because I can glance up and see what's going on. No, I'm like, well, who the fuck is that? I don't know.
It's funny because the Marlins have spent the entire season with this campaign about the colors of the uniforms matching the colors of the city too.
They just stripped all that away.
Stripped it all away to highlight. When you really look at it, nothing. A lot of these guys don't have some crazy personalized thing. Like Mike Clevenger, yeah, he has his shoes, but
yeah, it's
awful. Clayton Kershaw is like, or I don't know, any of these guys. Shane Bieber is as cookie cutter as you can get when it comes to look. You know, like it's, if anything, they express their like, at least Indians pitchers I know, because the starting pitcher selects the uniform for the day. That is an expression of some kind of personality.
Yeah,
like there's a reason why Trevor Bauer picked the same traditional uniform every single time. Cause he's a traditionalist. I mean, I think if there's one, it sounds like a weird thing to say about Trevor Bauer, but I think that's certainly a thing that he is when it comes to the look and feel of baseball. He definitely loves baseball for being what it is and always has been. Even if he does obviously is at the forefront of its change, or like there's a reason that Carlos Carrasco always wore the blue tops. I don't know what it is. He thought they were,
but
neat.
There's gotta be one. Yeah.
There's a reason for it though. You know, like, I don't know. There's, when they wear the red tops, there's a reason they're doing that. So,
yeah, my personal theory for it is that, like, the ones last year, everybody said they liked them because it was, I think what that does is nostalgic for the olds, basically like me and you and old people who are 30 and over now, considered old, who watch the game, like made us nostalgic for being a kid and watching, like playing in those bright uniforms. But I don't know if anybody actually bought them.
Those were great. Those were great.
Right. See, but you're saying they were great. But did you buy one? Did anybody buy one?
Honestly, no. I don't. I've never bought. I own one jersey, and it's a fake jersey that Ryan Merritt never actually. Well, he wore in spring training one year when he wore 69 as a spring training pitcher. So I own that.
But what I'm saying is, like, these black and white ones, I bet these appeal more to like teenagers and. They're probably cooler. The black ones, especially. I think the white ones were just thrown under the bus to get the black jerseys out there. I think those appeal more to the youths.
There has, you know, and we've seen this across everything. The design aesthetic of minimalism, I think, is the stupidest thing on earth. I hate minimalism. I like big, loud crap. Like,
I hate it in logos. Like all the NBA logos are going to minimalism, and there's these flat, stupid things. It's the worst, yeah.
Though there's a reason why one of the best logos in all of the NBA is the Celtics one, because it's a little man with a basketball. It's just like, we have this silly thing still, you know?
Yeah, it's, I don't
like it. If the Browns wanted to do it, you know, right, they would really embrace that little elf,
the elf
thing.
Yeah, hell yeah. Or the dog.
Embrace them both. Have him riding a dog.
That needs to be on the helmet. I love it.
Have that on the helmet. Fuck that orange piece of crap. You know, that's just memories of losing for us forever, you know?
There is a push to get the elf everywhere more. They do use it a little more in social media and stuff. I don't know if I hope they
need to bring then the dog too. I mean, why have only one? Like,
just bring along the dog.
Certain, you know, like the reason I love the Raiders logo, because it's not minimalist. It's a little pirate man, sort of, but wearing a football helmet. Also,
and he's got depth to it. It's
the more
like
you
too.
Look at that logo, it's confusing because, like, oh, it's a pirate. Wait, he's wearing an old timey football logo. Wait a minute, what's going on here? Like,
it's old Pirates logo was great too, and it was like the old timey pirate. It wasn't quite old timey. It was just like a, how'd you describe it? I don't know. It's just some dude in a pirate uniform.
A classic swashbuckling look. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah. Like, or, not in a movie kind. It'd be like what a real pirate would look like. He's not really like flashy.
Or like
he's just
the Buccaneers one, which was just the creamsicle colors, but he had the knife between his teeth and everything. Yeah, now that's a great look.
Yeah.
No, yeah, just the I don't think it's funny to call a black and white, you know, look overwrought, but I think if we're going to think of it as anything, it's certainly overwrought. Like, it's just, it looks like shit I don't know. It's baseball.
It looks like shit. That's what you're gonna get.
It's just such a confusing sport in general, because it embraces its traditionalism so much, and then it has these fits and starts towards trying to like be in the new era, and then. And this is a constant thing that we hear all the time. You know, we heard it this past week from Goose Gossage, but all these old guys who are the, you know, the old standard bearers, the legends of past, who just hate everything about the modern game. And it's so confusing, because these are the guys we look back on with reverence, who also hate everything we like now. And the leagues and whatnot, they embrace these old timey looks and throwback jerseys, but then at the same time, they give us this shit. So I don't know. It's confusing to me. It seems like it's an entire league that's run by people who don't know what the hell's going on.
I mean, clearly with the hats, they have no idea what they were doing because somebody didn't think that through all the way.
Right. No. Yes. No, that was definitely, you know what? It definitely smells like just a marketing guru or some crap. Like black and white, baby. It's sexy. Some guy just doing cocaine in the bathroom before the ooh, yeah, baby. Black and white. Ooh, yeah. We're going to get it. You know, it's going to just burn in your retinas. Huh? You got to cook your rods and cones with the black and the whiteness, and you'll see the shining shoes and the brilliant belts. And oh yeah, oh baby, here we go. It's getting, oh, and then you know, Manfred's like, yeah, all right, I guess so.
I do kind of want the hat though. I'm not proud, but I do kind of want the black hat with the black blocks.
Eh, I guess you. But the thing is, you've been able to get that hat right forever.
Yeah,
I in the past have owned like black on black hats, white on white hats. Of all different teams, I had one that was shades of brown for some reason. Like it was the Expos logo, but you know, instead of the red, white, and blue thing in the middle there, each one was a different color brown. It was the strangest hat on earth. But like these hats have always existed. This does nothing new except for the jerseys made, which you could have gotten anyway.
When you start losing your hair, there's no magical cure. But there is a way to stop hair loss from happening in the first place. It's called Keeps, and it's a treatment that's proven up to 90% effective at reducing and stopping further hair loss. You don't have to go to the doctor's office or stand in line at the pharmacy for a prescription. You'll visit a doctor online, and they'll send the medication right to you in a discreet package. And with Keeps starting at just $10 a month, you don't have to go broke to avoid going bald. 2 out of 3 guys will experience some form of male pattern baldness by the time they're 35, so prevention is key. The sooner you start using Keeps, the more hair you'll save. Nearly 100,000 men trust Keeps for their hair loss prevention medication. They have more 5-star reviews than any of their competitors. So take action now and visit Keeps.com/SBNation. With our special offer, you'll receive your first month of treatment for free at Keeps.com/SBNation. That's KEEPS.com/SBNation.
So Players Weekend was probably the second worst thing to happen this weekend to the Indians, kind of a 1A, 1B situation. Jose Ramirez broke the hamate bone in his right hand. He's on the 10-day DL for now, but it's very likely he's going to be out for a lot longer than that. It happened on Saturday, middle of an at-bat. He swung, he missed, and then he just sort of grimaced and was trying to, like, clench his hand. He was trying to figure out what was going on. You could tell in his face he knew, like, something wasn't good. He said on Sunday that when he swung afterwards, he heard a crack in his hand, and obviously that's not a good sound to hear out of your hand. Typically, it takes 6 to 8 weeks to recover. He's going to have surgery on Monday. They're going to remove the bone, I'd assume. That's usually what they do. There's no sense trying to fix it. You can just take it out. It's a big thing. Joey Gallo had it in July. He's still not back. He probably won't be back for the rest of the season at this point. And usually it takes the players a while to get power back after because I guess so much comes from the hand and it sucks. It doesn't seem like Match Lifting said in our Slack channel that it's not an Indians playoff run unless it's a devastating injury. So we got another one coming in, Jose Ramirez. Yu Chang got called up to replace him. He started third base today. Obviously, him and Mike Freeman are probably going to take a lot of the at-bats at third base. So, I don't know. It sucks. Jose Ramirez is now injured. He was finally getting hot, and he started the season terrible, and now he's good, and now he's also gone. So what are your feelings on Jose Ramirez not here? Probably, I would assume, the rest of the season, as it comes back, like, for the World Series, if they make it. It's going to be very close.
It is a testament to his incredible talent that he scraped out a 103 OPS plus now, what I assume is for the season, after how he was for the first half.
Yeah.
Like, what a great player. Honestly, like, if this happened a month ago, and we look back at his career in 10 years, you know, whatever, and he's won a couple MVPs and a couple World Series with the Indians, we'll look at this weird 2019 and go, what happened there? Like, he was just so terrible. This will just be like he's still very much off where he was the previous 2 years, but it doesn't look quite so bad, I suppose. And now also it's all muddled because it's like, oh, he has a broken hand, too. So it'll confuse everyone when we look back on this in a while. But no, you're
right. I wonder
if
the perception is actually a little worse. Like, if you're glancing through the lines, you're going to see, like, he just had this one down year as opposed to, like, one that's, like, a 70 WRC+. I almost think, like, having one where he absolutely tanks would people really realize he was just terrible. But people are going to think he was just average all year long this year instead of starting so terribly and then being so good. Because nobody's going to know that he was so good, really.
Yeah, when you actually go in and click and you realize it's since July. July, you had 1045 OPS. You're like, oh, yeah, damn, he was a god. It blows. But I'm very sad because he is good. After hearing this, I typed in hamate bone injury because I'm sure we all did.
Oh, yeah.
And I got an article from, I don't know, some manufacturer of axe bats. And it's just like, handmade bone injuries are because of the design of classic bats.
It is only, true, though. That's a thing. Like, axe bats help axe a lot. Bat.
Apparently it does. Maybe he will be a... maybe he'll turn into an axe bat guy now, and it'll unleash his power even more because he'll be able to line up his knuckles the way he's chopping wood.
You know, so, I think that is like one of the biggest benefits of that, because the way hammock bones happen is because the way the bats rest and it rubs into their wrist. Right. Or not their wrist, but like the bottom of their palm.
Their palm, right where the... What a weird little bone, you know? What a weird little thing.
What a little piece of shit right there. You little,
yeah, little piece of crap bone. Get out of here, you. Get out of here.
Rip it out of my hand in protest.
Yeah, I'm getting rid of mine. I'm against handmaids now. We're done.
Yeah, because Daniel Johnson, who's when he was with the Nationals, he just now started to get his power back, so it's a little risky. So, I mean, I'm like, what do we do now? Like, is it just Yu Chang? And because they're not going to play anybody else at third, I wouldn't assume. Although I do have one kind of out there suggestion for you, Merritt. Nolan Jones, who's 21. The Indians arguably their top prospect.
No.
He's in Double-A. But he's, I mean, so Steamer has him, just going by projections here, 84 WRC plus compared to like 70 for Freeman and Chang.
Well, Chang is hitting at a 971 OPS right now.
How many at bats, Merritt?
Immaterial to this conversation. You used a weird sample size earlier, and I didn't question it. You cannot question this one. This but one I'm just is saying, fine.
Nolan Jones. He's been super good at every level. It's, I mean, if they think this is their year and they think he can come up and be just only below average, I kind of like the idea of calling him Nolan Jones.
Well, I mean, if
you don't want any of that part of that,
if we're gonna be having just a shitty player at third, you might as well have someone who is at least polished defensively. I mean, I think
Nolan Jones is a good defensive third baseman.
Says who?
Oh, is he? No, maybe not.
I don't know.
Says Nolan Jones's mom, probably.
Well, you know, I'm sure she's a sweet lady. I don't know anything about prospects. Who do I know?
I mean, Yu Chang is a shortstop who just got moved to third base because Francisco Lindor exists. So I don't know if he's exactly polished at third base.
Move Francisco Lindor to third base.
Just bounce him around. He's a kid who can play short.
He'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, but I don't know, it's going to be rough going forward.
It stinks. Like you said, he's been so good, and things were really starting to solidify. And maybe the blessing in disguise here is that it's only a month. And the impact of a single position player over a single month is
not that big,
not huge necessarily. It can be, obviously, the way he's been hitting the ball since, you know, whatever arbitrary point you want to pick after he stopped being shit.
It was kind of a weird coincidence today, too, that it was the spot that Framil Reyes was hitting in was Jose Ramirez's spot before he was injured. Yeah. And he came up with two strikes and two outs and actually pulled through and did it. Like, if he didn't do it, that would have been some really shitty kind of karma.
Well, and
that's
the thing, too. You know, like, this can be papered over by a hot streak by Reyes or Puig or Jason Kipnis or Yu Chang. You know, I don't know. Maybe he catches some magic and it just has a 900 BABIP for the next, you know, 25 days or something. We're all just, you know, crapping our pants over Yu Chang.
I think the absolute best case scenario is that Yu Chang, like, does some. I don't think he has to be like a superstar in the second half, but like,
no, I hold.
If he's an above average hitter and pretty good at third base, either they can trust they can move him to shortstop when Francisco Lindor leaves, or if that's too far off, they've got a really good trade chip somewhere,
right?
Either this offseason or midway through next season. But it's unfortunate it had to come because Jose Ramirez was injured, but it helps the Indians a lot that Yu Chang can get a lot of exposure now. Especially if they go into the playoffs, he does something big there. That's a lot, considering how he's been a pretty decent, I know he's knocking him, but as a shortstop who can hit 20 home runs, maybe that's a pretty big thing the Indians could have to leverage away or just hold on to him until Lindor's gone. So,
and he had as many hard hit balls as Santana or Mercado and more than Lindor on Sunday. So that's something. I mean,
it is. He hits the ball hard. You know, that's always been his thing. He's good enough on defense and he got some pop for a shortstop. I think the worst thing that could happen is that Mike Freeman just gets leaned on too much and right now he has a WOBA of 352, but an expected WOBA of 297. He doesn't hit the ball very hard. He has a high BABIP. Like, everything points to this 32-year-old rookie is going to regress at some point. And I fear that Tito's going to ignore that, and he's going to lean on his man, Mike Freeman, to play third base because he's been a hero a couple times. And then he's going to just get dragged into the ground and continue to be bad, just be Michael Martinez 2.0, and then ruin everything. Because he's hitting, like, all his exit velocity stuff, like, looks like Michael Martinez. He's just been so much luckier, and he's had some big hits that Martinez never had. So I mean, I want to see Yu Chang get a lot of playing time out of this. That's the only really silver lining, I think.
I mean, it all it does too is bolster my, you know, my continued theory that this is a secret rebuild year. And if he actually is called up and hits, and we're like, oh, we did it again, yeah, baby.
So what you're saying is that between innings, the Indians smashed Jose Ramirez's hamate bone so they can
get
Yu Chang some playing time.
I guess what I'm really saying is it's an accidental rebuild year. I guess they're just like, shit hit the fan. Everything went wrong, and somehow this is, I don't know, the relative darkness before the dawn. And if this is really what the darkness looks like, then it's not really so bad. Yeah, I don't know. It still sucks, though. Could I be like Jose Ramirez. He's great. We have no more strutting little men now. It's sad.
Yeah, he was even getting back into playing Mario Kart by the sounds of it. Like, they were playing in the dugout there, and talking about it.
He was in the zone. No, it was happening. Yeah. He was becoming the old Jose Ramirez, and then this stupid garbage happened.
So Trevor Bauer, he had his comments with his new team on the Reds. Apparently likes them quite a bit. His quote exactly in the post-game interview was, "The information is great here. The coaching staff is great here. Overall, I'm a lot happier than I was. Sometimes you don't realize how unhappy you are in a situation until you're out of it. I miss some of my teammates and stuff, but overall, I don't miss a whole lot about Cleveland." Whew. That's a lot to say there, Bauer. That's I get what he meant. He wasn't talking about like shitting on the city of Cleveland or even necessarily his teammates or anything. It was very specifically about analytics and the information that he gets through the Reds coaches. Obviously, Trevor Bauer is a huge analytics guy. He wants all the information he can get. He wants to use it. But clearly, it was not good enough what he was getting from the Indians. It kind of pairs well with what Lucas Giolito said about the Indians not adapting to changeups. And it was like Tito bunts a lot. Like, there's some hints that maybe the Indians, there's something between their front office and the players that doesn't get all the information through. Mm-hmm. But I mean, also the Indians win a ton. And Trevor Bauer didn't complain when it was 2018 and he was a Cy Young candidate. But all of a sudden, now that Trevor Bauer is bad, the Indians don't give him enough information. And also, he gave up 8 runs today. So I don't know what that information is doing for him. He's been awful since he got to the Reds. So I don't know. It's just more just, it seems to me like it's just Trevor Bauer making excuses for things instead of just saying, I suck once in a while and I sucked for Cleveland this year. But it's Cleveland's fault that I have enough information and I'm happy now that I'm far away than he was before.
So I was wondering about this. I just wanted to look in just I wanted to look into the front office and stuff and the guys who run baseball at these various places and who is making the decisions. And, you know, like, obviously we are living the era of the superstar GM and whatever, you know, you're pick a name and whatever, go with it. You know, your Lunau's and the Epstein's and the guy who runs Dodgers, Friedman. Anyway, Nick Kroll is the general manager of the Reds. It's funny if you search his name. Because in the thing pops up a picture of Nick Kroll from comedian.
That's who popped up in my head immediately when you said it too. So I get right. I get where you're coming from, Google. I get it.
Yeah, Nick Kroll is he comes from the Athletics originally, and he's been with the Reds since 2003. So I don't know. Maybe he is as good as knowledge-wise is whatever the front office of the Indians has going on. Maybe he's better at communicating. Maybe he has the right people to communicate the information from the office and the analysts down to the field. I don't know. I mean, maybe he does. But as far as I know, the Indians are a better run team, and they have had more success over the last, call it 25, basically since the Reds won the World Series in the 90s, I would say. The Indians have had more success.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it all seems to come back to, it's just Trevor Bauer doesn't like Tito. Because Even in his goodbye video, he never mentioned him at all. It was, Andre Knott obviously talked about it on their pod, the A to Z podcast, that Tito tried to go with Trevor Bauer's dad to lunch to try to get through to him. It didn't work. I think it's just clear those two did not get along, and it boiled over. And then Tito said some things when Trevor Bauer went, like it wasn't very emotional. They just went on their way. So I don't think Trevor Bauer intentionally was taking a shot at anybody, but I think it all comes back to the dislike between those two. I'm assuming, because it sounds like the Indians did a lot to try to accommodate him, and he just didn't. Nothing was ever good enough, and it was just, there was always excuses for why he was bad. There was excuses for why the Indians brought up his social media stuff at arbitration. There was just always these things that he always had, and then now he's saying it out loud in public. And he said some of his teammates he'll miss. I don't know if that was another slight there, but I don't think he got along with everybody in the clubhouse.
No,
I'm sure he misses Clevinger, but...
Well, that was the thing we always kind of thought, too, that he didn't get along with people. And I don't know, maybe not. I don't know. But it's a hard thing to talk about because we don't really know for sure is all, I guess. And it's just, I don't know, it just sucked. I don't know. It's gossipy and smelly.
The main takeaway is that everybody's better now that he's gone. I think the Indians are better off without him.
I guess. And Tito's better off without him. I mean, it sucks when you lose a good pitcher is the thing. And
I mean, yeah, but they got Fernando Reyes and Puig, so I don't think it's
Puig's, Puig's gone in like 2 months, though, and I just, you know, Fernando Reyes is still raw as hell. So we'll see. I mean, you know, whoever wins with that, you know, the trade. But I don't know. It's a strange thing to say. I don't know why people keep bringing it up. It's so stupid. I'm a very open-minded and friendly person, and it's hard for me to find people that, even if I disagree with them, that I don't like. And it always it confounds me that within such an insular world as baseball, there's such massive divisions, I suppose.
All right, so let's finish. We'll finish up by reviewing the fan poll stuff from last week. Obviously, last week. So it was 2 weeks ago. We had our last episode of the podcast. So it's been a little bit, but as always, last week they sent out the poll to get the general feel of Indians fans. And they actually they were going to have me do a specific Indians one for last week, but then we had a storm, a tree fell on a power line. I was out without power for like 5 days. I kind of forgot about it. Then at the last second, I just said it to Tanya, our league manager. I said, we can just do like, well, the Indians win the AL Central. And then, of course, it's not the most unbiased pool in the world because it's only Indians fans. But 70% said they believe the Indians will win the AL Central. This, of course, is before Jose Ramirez broke his hamate bone, so that might affect things. But still, even before that, the Indians' confidence, Indians fans was at 79%. And, of course, Boston Red Sox watch. They went up again to 13% from 8%. Those fans are still miserable. Mm-hmm. Manager approval, Terry Francona, is still 91%. So it's like the third week in a row. Whoever likes Tito likes him. Whoever doesn't. There's a very thin margin of people that don't. And for what it's worth, I always say that I still approve what he does. For all the shit I give him for the analytics things, like I still think he's a net positive of what he does for the clubhouse.
So
I'm one of the ones that are saying yes, but there's 9% who don't approve of what he's doing. So what are your thoughts on of what we've seen this week through the poll? I think, again, we talked about 2 weeks ago. This is an interesting thing to see every week. That's the Astros dip 2%. They're now at 98%.
God, what happened?
Sky's falling in Houston. I don't know if they lost a game or something, but it's just terrible over there.
Team, they can't do anything right.
Baltimore Orioles are 91%. All right, what are you doing?
You love it.
The Indians dipped a little bit, but I'd assume it's going to go down quite a bit more because of what happened with Jose's hand. I'll be interested to see like what it does. Like if people still are confident in the future so that it doesn't dip too much, or they just see Jose Ramirez's hand broke and it just plummets. But I'm with you what you said, that I don't think a position player is going to impact that much. I'd still be pretty confident.
It's hard to move. God damn it. I love the Stockholm syndrome of the Orioles. Believe in the future.
We're doing great. See, I think the problem is they have Gary Thorne, who's just too good at what he does. So I know. They're just so confident.
The future will be great. Yeah, Gary. Yeah. Thank you. All my fears are gone now. Poor Phillies fans. They're so sad. Oh, they're way better than they were a week ago, though. This is fun.
Yeah, they went from 7 to 25. They're on the way up.
They really.
That was after Bryce Harper's grand slam. That's why.
Everything went so sad in Pittsburgh.
I don't know if they stopped voting or what, but they've been 0% for 4 weeks. They've got
fuck this team.
Wait, but yeah, they still like what is their coach? Why can't I think of their manager? Big Red Face. Big McRed Face. He's at 14%. Yeah. So people are voting. It's not that nobody's voting. 14% approve of what is his name?
They probably just hate Neil Huntington. I love that I can call their general manager's name, but I can't remember.
Clint Hurdle. There
we
go.
Clint Hurdle. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're voting. They live. There's Pittsburgh fans, but they just don't approve of the team.
I want to know what happened with the Astros, though. Like
somebody's just pissed off.
I think I think happened. I think that was with that game that Greinke got shelled or something. Yeah. And then, like, the day afterward, Garrett Cole goes out and strikes out, like, 104 or something like that, while throwing 99 miles an hour on average.
Their former Cy Young winner had a rough day, so then their future Cy Young winner got to dominate. I feel so bad for him.
Perfectly balanced, as in all things.
Yeah. Beautiful. All right. And if anybody wants to sign up for it, by the way, I'll leave it in the show notes, but you can go to surveymonkey.com/r/letsgotribefanpolls. It's all one word.
People were very happy 2 weeks ago. That's nice.
Yeah, that was what happened. I don't remember. They were just that was after the that wasn't quite when they won the division, but they were also real. It was before the Mets series, basically, when things were so good. Before the Yankees too.
AL Central. I mean, they're 3.5 losing the game on Sunday sucked. That really hurt. They're 3.5 now on August 25th, and they play the Twins
six
more times.
Yep.
And they also play in over the next several days, they play who? They play the Tigers, the Rays, the White Sox, the Twins, the Angels, the Twins, the Tigers, the Phillies, the White Sox, the Nats.
So it's pretty light from here on out other than
the Twins. It is. I mean, the Nats are really good, and I know we talked about this in the past. They'll be fighting for something. The Phillies might be fighting for something, and they're not bad. Like, their pitching has really hit the skids, but they have bats, and the Angels, you know, they still have Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani and a couple other good players. They don't have pitchers, but and the Twins' schedule is just as easy because they get also to play the AL Central, so it really helps them.
I mean, it really all comes down to the head-to-head matchup. Like, the Indians could lose several more games in a row and still win the division pretty handily.
Yeah, but they'd have to – I mean, the thing is they'd have to go to and then come home and sweep the Twins. Like, they need to win – the thing is, if they win four of those six games, they only get two games back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, so they're only, wait. Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, they only get two games back. And so they need to – right now, they need – if they won every game the Twins won, and then they swept the Twins once, and then – won the other series. That's the thing. Like, they are not in the driver's seat by any stretch of the imagination, but they, you know, that's why not getting Kluber back or whatever kind of stinks. And I know that Adam Plitko is going to throw one of those games.
He's going to be a stinker here pretty soon.
Oh, God. Him and Plesak.
I mean, Plesak's holding out, but he's,
yeah,
the
I know.
Cracks
he's,
are showing.
It is, it's just, he's being just battered, you know? It's like watching an ancient wall just be hammered by a battering ram. It's splintering and cracks are showing. He's starting to fall apart. He's like, I'm holding strong, Cap. I'm mixing a lot of metaphors here. He's a guy in a boat shoveling water out, but also a wall, so it's confusing, but you get
the and he's idea. Also a Thor in that scene where he makes his hammer, but also there's no hammer at the end. He's just going to get obliterated by the sun.
Also that, you know, he could be lit on fire while we're trying to restart a neutron star. Or not, you know, or not. Who knows? Yeah. He's hanging or out he with a gigantic dwarf, you know.
Yeah. He might just be the dwarf. He just lives forever and just does his thing. And
he just has a metal hand now. So
yeah, it's weird. Anyway, that's going to do it for our show this week. Thanks for listening. If you are, again, if you made it this far, leave a review. Let us know. Let us know on Twitter if you listen. I like to see that people listen. It's weird now that we have like people that consistently listen, and I like it. It's really cool. Like some guy, I believe it was Cheddar Fetter, who does a lot of great fan posts. He said he went back and listened. He was going back through as far as 2016 and listening. That must sound terrible. I've listened to our old episodes just to hear him, and God, the quality was so bad because I was...
It still sucks. I can't imagine how bad it was right, then. Cool. Wow. What? Who said that?
No, because what I used to do before I had any idea how to do anything, I had two laptops. I was at a kitchen counter or kitchen table with a blanket on it. I thought that was enough to mute all the noise, even though I'm in a big wooded room. But then I would call myself on Skype, have a third account on the second computer that would record everything coming in. That was my way of doing it. So I was... the sound was laggy. There was like spikes on the robot noise. There was... because my sound was garbage because it was my own internet was doubling down trying to listen twice, so it was really blurry, and then it was great. But now we got this nice Zencaster. I got a decent microphone. You've got a pretty good microphone.
That's okay.
It's pretty good. We can get close and get all nice in there. Like
yeah,
that.
We just talk real quiet.
Get right into the pop filter. Anyway,
pop filter. I don't have
the episode
one
this week. So you don't have a pop filter? Get a
plosives.
Oh no, plosives. Those are a lot of plosives. That's gonna be it for this week. I'm gonna send it out like this. Talk to you next week.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Amanda Clute, editor-in-chief of Eater.
And I am Daniel Janine, a producer here at Eater.
And we are here to tell you about our brand new podcast, Eater's Digest.
Every week on the show, we dive into the weirdest, funniest, and most important stories in the world of food.
With the inside scoop from the biggest names in the industry and expert insights from the Eater newsroom.
It's a really fun time, so I would say subscribe to Eater's Digest for free today on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app.